More than 100 million people have Twitter accounts. Every moment across the globe, they're posting thousands of short digital messages. That's a lot of data. So maybe that list on the right side of a Twitter screen, the Twitter Trends list, is a good way to keep an eye out for cultural change. Maybe. And maybe not, says Tarleton Gillespie. He's an information science professor at Cornell. He talked with Anne Strangechamps.
I kind of wanted to start with just a basic description for the many people who actually don't follow Twitter yet of what the trends list is.
Sure. Well, so Twitter users, they can see a list of what Twitter calls trends. It's a short list, 10 or 12 terms. You can see them globally, or you can see it for regions. So you can specify your city or your country. And what Twitter is offering is a set of terms that they say are being talked about excitedly at that moment. You'll see everything from political topics to entertainment topics to basic quotidian things like the holidays.
So it's kind of like a really quick measure of what people are talking about and what people think is important.
It is. And I think a lot of people find it so, a nice quick measure. And I think once you start to open up what it offers to measure and what it is measuring, it gets more complicated. We have to think about that trends list in a number of ways. One is this question of what's being measured. Two is it is also a space for sponsored terms that were not popular by tweeting standards of any kind. And the third is that topics are left off of that. The simplest version is profanity, right? So these are curational. There are things that they have decided don't belong here. There are things that are measured, and the measure is complex, and then there are things that are sponsored. And the fact that they exist all in the same space, you don't have to make an argument that says that people don't understand the difference to still say it matters that these things are being commingled, and it matters that they're being offered as trends, or offered as most liked, or most favorited, or bestseller, or most recommended.
Can you explain the debate that arose recently about the Twitter trends list around the Occupy movement and also around WikiLeaks?
Sure. So around the Occupy movement was the most recent of this. Some people beginning to say they thought that Occupy Wall Street, the term, or Occupy Boston or Occupy Oakland, should have been showing up on that trends list more or at all. And the accusation was that Twitter was somehow removing or altering trends so that those terms would not appear. I'm convinced that Twitter was not and has no reason to be taking terms out. In fact, if you look at the way Twitter presents itself in the public eye, it gets a lot of momentum from saying that it's played a very important role in the Arab Spring and democratic uprisings. It seems counterintuitive that they would want to somehow remove Occupy Wall Street. And remember, no one's accusing them of deleting the actual tweets. So the ability to communicate on the network about this topic, no one was saying that was hampered. So it's only whether this term appears in this one particular place, but a place that people might encounter a term that they weren't talking about themselves.
But does this mean that people weren't actually talking about Occupy Wall Street or Occupy Oakland all that much?
Well, that's where it gets mysterious or fascinating for me. That term did seem to spike in terms of sheer volume, but didn't make it on the trends list. And that's where it starts to raise these questions about what trends is actually measuring. I think a lot of people are willing or encouraged to take it as a measure of sheer volume. If you talk more about a topic, then at some point it should trend. And what Twitter is measuring is actually different than that. They look at velocity. They look at whether a term has trended before. They look at whether the content of these tweets is mostly just retweets or whether it's lots of original content. And then the most interesting and the hardest one to get our heads around is that Twitter will look at whether a term is being used among an already densely connected set of users or whether the term is exceeding dense clusters of users. And things that exceed talk across different groups, that should trend differently than something that's just being talked about by a set of people who are already connected, already following each other, even if they're tweeting a lot.
How responsible are the big companies that run these social platforms? Are they aware of and tweaking their algorithms all the time in order to try to promote the fairest and broadest kind of public discourse?
I've done some interviews with the people at some of these companies that are responsible for content policy, and I actually find that they're very thoughtful about these issues. I think they know what a complicated problem they have on their hands. Twitter made an announcement in 2010 that they were changing their trends algorithm, and they apologized to Justin Bieber because he had been trending very high, and he was exactly the kind of topic they wanted to diminish a little bit. So they were certainly going in and saying, we don't want this tool to simply rehearse the same sort of pop culture phenomenon. I think the tricky thing is not, are they not thinking about the responsibility? Because they are. It's that they're thinking of their responsibility through the lens of sustaining their business, through the lens of keeping customers. These are not unreasonable things for them to care about, but that means that these interests are not always aligned. Certainly, Twitter wants an association with Democratic foment, right? I mean, it has benefited from that for the moment. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be thinking about how the way they design their algorithm makes decisions about what counts as important. That's a much harder thing to do.
Are you suggesting that we think this isn't an editorial process, it's just mathematical, but that in fact the mathematics have an editorial process built into them? They're created by humans for specific purposes.
I mean, I think that's crucial, and I think it shows how limited our language is, right? To only think about the measurable and the editorial is going to leave no room for us to raise the questions you just raised, right? Who designs the criteria? What are the criteria? Why are those criteria there?
Why does this matter? I mean, why do we care what ends up on Twitter's trends list?
These are the spaces where public discourse happens now, among others, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or YouTube. And we've always wanted to ask a question about the way that broadcasters or owners have a responsibility and also have an intervention into how that public conversation happens and gets portrayed back to us. And if the mechanism by which we talk to each other, and specifically the mechanism by which we find out what other people are thinking and what seems to matter, if that's not just some simple calculation, but it's also editorial, it's a curation, there are things left out, there are things being measured that are oblique to us, that matters not just whether your topic gets talked about or whether your topic is visible to other people, but it matters in terms of what's the shape of a public discourse in this environment.
So to draw an analogy, are you suggesting that maybe for social media platforms, we need something analogous to the fairness doctrine in broadcasting, the idea that you have to have a certain kind of editorial balance?
I think it would be hard to bring in models that think about a central voice and honoring two sides, which is what Fairness Doctrine wanted to do. The space of topics and the space of interest is so complicated. I think what we're looking at now is whatever mechanism shows us back to us, we need to be smarter about what it's doing, first of all. But we could also call to say that more transparency about the criteria would be good. And maybe a third is a kind of thoughtfulness and diversity about what one shows. So Twitter Trends shows 10 terms, and those terms run the gamut. What if there were different measures? What if there are ways to say, show me the most important political discussions, or show me how you reached that conclusion, or instead of showing me topics that exceed clusters, show me the most important words that are showing up within clusters. And maybe that offers us different slices, right? That offers a kind of transparency that isn't just this is how we made that calculation, but a transparency about what's being talked about. I find that people do have a kind of comfort in thinking that these services are neutral. YouTube is all the videos that anyone wanted to post. Google is showing you every website that it can track, and that's not true. It's not true, and it's way too simple an understanding. We also have to have a literacy on kind of a cultural and political level. How do we as a society think about the way that the choices that a Twitter or a Google or a Facebook makes matters for the whole discussion, matters for what's visible, matters for free speech, matters for the shape of how people talk to each other.
Hmm. Aren't you curious about the psychology that drives all of this? I mean, don't you ever think, why do we care so much what other people are thinking or what other people like or what they're tweeting?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. There's such an interesting blend here of wanting to know what is trending, what are other people talking about, and wanting to be visible in that, wanting your topic to be there. It's also that sense of belonging. It's also having your finger on the pulse of a public conversation. These are hugely important things in terms of a democracy, but it clearly goes beyond that.
You have an idea I read about in one of your essays about the spiral of silence. Can you explain what that is and how social media platforms might play into it?
Yeah, I don't want to take credit for it. It's a theory that's been kicked around for a while in the field of communication, that we judge how comfortable we are talking about our opinions based on how we think they'll be received. So if we walk into a conversation, this is the sort of simplest version, we walk into a dinner conversation and we have a particular political belief, But we think that everyone at the table does not share that belief. In fact, we think that our perspective is quite outside of the kind of consensus. We might be hesitant to share it. And there's all sorts of social reasons. We don't want to be the outsider. We don't want to overly challenge people. But what happens if we're talking about on a public scale and we have a sense of what's considered normal and what is an outsider perspective based on what? Based on how it's portrayed in the media. If that perception is skewed by what we've heard or by what's been painted as normal, we might make a decision to hold back. It's a contested theory, but the worry that that raises is that those who feel marginal will continue to marginalize themselves because they will think that they are too far out of the frame of possibility to even speak their mind.
Are there ethical guidelines that you'd suggest companies follow in designing social media platforms?
I can think of two things. One is that we had to help newspaper publishers and broadcasters to think about their public interest, to say, you know, you play a hugely important role here. And if you don't play it well, or you play it only to your own strengths or only to your own economic benefit, you will fail the public. You know, newspapers had that feeling. I do think people at some of these sites are thinking about that, but that's not how they came to think about these sites. That's not how they got there. So one is inculcating this public commitment and understanding that for better or for worse, Facebook is an environment where hugely important political discussion and day-to-day discussion happens. And Twitter is a hugely important environment for this, and YouTube and Flickr and all these online spaces. The other one would be to say that I don't think we've ever done a good job in teaching engineers and programmers that they are now, and perhaps always have been, the makers of public tools. You need to offer someone the sense that when they build a tool, the choices they make matter, not just for how efficient it is or how cool it is or how well it's going to sell, but that it's going to be in the hands of people doing important things.
Tarleton Gillespie teaches information science at Cornell. His latest book is The Politics of Platforms. Anne Strainchamps talked to him.